headlines this hour. The death toll from a bomb explosion in central Istanbul rises to 6. The Turkish president vows to find those behind what he calls heinous attack. Tehran says the French president Emmanuel Macron's remarks following his meeting with a U.S.-based anti-Iran activist are regrettable and shameful. Also coming up, the U.S., Japan, and South Korea vow a strong and resolute response if Pyongyang carries out a 7th nuclear test. Thanks for joining us. Bomb explosion in the heart of Turkey's Istanbul has killed at least 6 and wounded 53. The country's president has described it as a heinous attack. Recep Tayyip Erdogan says the bombing has the hallmarks of terrorism, but there's no conclusive evidence yet to confirm this. He's vowed to find those behind it. The blast occurred on the busy Istiklal Street in Taksim area, which is popular with locals and tourists. There's been no claim of responsibility. Istanbul and other Turkish cities have been targeted in the past by Kurdish separatists, Daesh, and other groups. Our Istanbul correspondent Roshan Saglam joined us earlier with more on the potential culprits behind the explosion.
He also said that the officials were able to know that a woman was the one who placed the explosive device in Istiklal Street, where the bombing took place, and he said that they were able to know the perpetrators and they will reveal information very soon. He also said that we will not allow those terrorists to reach their goals in Turkey, and we will be able to make this nation safe again. Right before Erdogan was speaking, we heard gunshots in an area that is very close to Istiklal Street. It's called Shishhana. It is exactly where actually Press TV office is. The gunshots were heard for like a few minutes, and the police was in the area. So I think that probably this could be they could be following the suspect. Since they revealed that the suspect was a woman, I think that is most likely that those perpetrators behind what happened today is the Kurdistan Workers Party, PKK, because as we all know that Kurdistan Workers Party is known that mainly the suicide bombers, the fighters in it, half of them is females. So they're mainly women, and a lot of them have been involved in explosions or attacks that took place inside Istanbul.
Iran continues with legal action against those involved in recent riots, with the judiciary charging more than 750 people in 3 provinces. The cases were filed in the southern province of Hormozgan, as well as the central provinces of Markazi and Isfahan. Those detained face charges including incitement to killing, harming security forces, spreading propaganda against the government, and damaging public property. They will be tried in the presence of their lawyers. More than 2,000 people have already been charged, nearly half of them in the capital, Tehran. Protests erupted in several Iranian cities in September after a young woman collapsed at a police station and died in the hospital days later. The protests were initially peaceful but soon turned into riots and vandalism. Iran has blamed provocation from abroad for the violence. It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. The French President Emmanuel Macron's recent meeting with anti-Iran activists is drawing a strong reaction from Tehran. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says the meeting was a flagrant violation of France's international responsibilities in the fight against terrorism and violence. He dismissed Macron's praise for an anti-Iran activist as regrettable and shameful. Kanani said that it is surprising that the president of a country which advocates freedom would degrade himself by meeting a dissident who has tried to spread hatred and carry out violent and terrorist acts both inside and Iran and against Iran's diplomatic missions abroad. Macron on Friday met with 4 notorious anti-Iran women activists, among them Masih Alinejad, who has for years led an anti-Iran campaign from the U.S. Masud Shajarian from the Islamic Human Rights Commission joins us from London. We also have Said Zafar Mehdi, who is a journalist, joining us here in the capital, Tehran. Welcome to you both. Masud Shajarian, first I'll start with you. It's quite interesting to have this meeting with these anti-Iran activists. I'm not too sure what to name them, but we're going to name them that. But the first question that comes about is, how does a meeting like that actually take place? Because behind the scenes, obviously, something was in the works in order to have a presence of another country, in this case, France, meet with them. What do you think about this meeting?
Well, the fact of the matter is that these individuals, in particular Masih, is known for promoting violence or indeed working with the terrorist groups like MKO and others to undermine and create chaos within Iran, and indeed destabilize and desecuritize the state of Iran. And no state around the world would allow this sort of insecurity to be systematically promoted and implemented in their country. And the fact of the matter is, it's not just standing for the concept of freedom or freedom of expression or women's rights. It really goes far beyond, and it shows that France is not just bystander in this activities of destabilizing Iran and trying to turn Iran to another Libya and Syria. It actually is actively involved, and by promoting these individuals and meeting them, it actually proves that. And then on the other side, what is really important is France talking about freedom for women. Come on. This is the country that sort of banned hijab. This is a country that at the same time asking people to wear face masks is actually make it unlawful for women to actually have a niqab. And they are not able to go to be educated. They can't go to university. They can't go to schools. They can't go to governmental buildings for having hijab or niqab. And they have got the audacity to talk about freedom for women. I mean, come on, this is outrageous. They should be ashamed of themselves to actually come out with this sort of slogans and trying to actually use these sort of principles for trying to create disharmony and insecurity in Iran, and doing it so publicly and so openly and so much based on double standards and hypocrisy.
Well, Said Zafar Mehdi, perhaps you can tell us a little bit about the character and the personality that the French president seems to have been so keen to entertain and to receive by the name of Masih Ahmadinejad, because her background is not one that really is something to be, in some sense, proud of when you take a look at the associations that she has. And in particular, if you can expand on how she's being somewhat supported by either this administration or the former administration, from the likes of the former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, for example, and other U.S. officials, even people that perhaps is being speculated that she's being thwarted into the scene by providing her with finances in order for her to promote her anti-Iran agenda.
First of all, thank you for having me. Well, be it French presidents meeting with this notorious self-proclaimed rights activist, or his shameful, ridiculous remarks that he made after meeting them, or even that of the German chancellor, it clearly amounts to brazen interference in Iran's internal affairs. Well, as you can see, these Western officials, which includes Macron and other Western officials, have been hell-bent on stoking sedition, on instigating rioters, on fanning the flames of unrest in Iran and anarchy, civil war in Iran in recent weeks. The fact that Macron met this delegation of self-proclaimed human rights activists makes it even more preposterous. As the foreign ministry spokesman said earlier today, and you mentioned it, these women have been primarily responsible for for sort of fanning violence and hatred in Iran in recent weeks by spreading misinformation and propaganda on social media, on other media. Like take the case of Masih Alinejad, you know, one of the women who met Macron. She has been, you know, on the payroll of CIA and US State Department for years now, and it's very clear to everybody. And her task is very clear-cut, you know, cut out, you know, to push the regime change agenda of the Western powers in Iran through propaganda, through misinformation, and she gets paid for that. And she has, in recent weeks, you know, sort of bragged about being the leader of these rights in Iran. You know, as you can see, there has been a competition for leadership of these deadly rights, from a former footballer to this lady. When it comes to this lady or other people who are involved in this regime change agenda of Western powers, I don't see any difference between them and those MKO terrorists who have blood of thousands of Iranians on their hands. There are many other Iranian expats who were in this delegation. Some of them were in this delegation who met Macron. They have been used by American spy agencies for years. And many of them happen to be working for the prestigious US-based think tanks. So it's natural that Iran will react strongly to Macron's meeting with these trouble-mongering Western agents. Having said that, it's also not entirely surprising, you know, given the fact that France and other Western states have left no stone unturned to inflame the situation in Iran in recent weeks. They are all complicit in the innocent blood that has been spilled on the streets of Iran over the past few months since September. None of these Western governments, these regimes, have bothered to condemn, for example, a Daesh terrorist attack in Shiraz, which killed more than a dozen people, and including women and children. You know, that's not an issue of human rights for these morally bankrupt people. All they want and all they are gunning for is regime change in Iran. And sure, that dream will obviously again turn into a nightmare for them. Islamic Republic has survived for 43 years, and despite all the plots and schemes, and it's here to stay. So let that be heard loud and clear.
Thank you very much. We're going to have to leave it there. Master Shajar, Islamic Human Rights Commission, and Sayed Zafar Mehdi, journalist who joined us from Tehran. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in. The U.S. president says that his country, Japan, and South Korea had never been more aligned in their stance against North Korea and its missile test.
Japan and the Republic of Korea are both critical allies of the United States, and for years our countries have been engaged in a trilateral cooperation out of a shared concern for the nuclear and missile threats of North Korea poses to our people. And North Korea continues provocation for provocative behavior. This partnership is even more important than it's ever been.
Biden, Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, and the South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol issued a joint statement condemning the recent missile test by North Korea. The trio met on the sidelines of an East Asian summit in the Cambodian capital. The three leaders vowed a, quote, strong and resolute response in case of a seventh nuclear test. Over the past week, North Korea has fired a barrage of missiles in response to Washington and Seoul, carrying out the largest ever air drills on the peninsula. Pyongyang considers the military exercises as a rehearsal for an invasion. The U.S. and South Korea, however, say that they are holding the drills in response to the North's possible plan to resume nuclear tests. Russia's foreign minister says U.S. and NATO are militarizing Southeast Asia to contain the interests of Russia and China in the Asia-Pacific. Sergei Lavrov says the Western states are trying to master the Southeast Asia region. According to the Russian minister, Washington's Indo-Pacific strategy is meant to bypass structures for regional cooperation. Lavrov was speaking after attending the summit of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations in Phnom Penh, Cambodia. He will also head the Russian delegation to the upcoming summit of the G20 countries in Bali, Indonesia. The U.S. President Joe Biden earlier told ASEAN leaders that Washington is committed to building an Indo-Pacific that is free and open. Moscow and Beijing, however, view the U.S. presence in the region as the threat. Historian and author Marcus Papadopoulos say that the increased U.S. military presence in Southeast Asia is part of Washington's efforts to protect this global hegemony.
NATO expansion to Central Europe, Eastern Europe, and to the former Soviet Union, the engineered coup in Kiev in February of 2014, the supply of vast amounts of money and weaponry to the Ukrainian government since the 24th of February of this year, the intensive increase in America's military presence in Southeast Asia and also in the Far East, specifically adjacent to Russia's Kamchatka Peninsula, the vilification and demonization of Russia and China, the construction and activation of a missile system in Eastern Europe and in South Korea, which can also be made offensive, is all designed to preserve and strengthen American global hegemony. Washington understands that the only two countries which can challenge successfully American global supremacy is Russia and China.
And that is for World News. Do stay with us.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, November 13th, 2022. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us which program or programs you like the best. Tell us your views and attitudes about our programs and our broadcast. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. So please don't go away and keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, this Sunday program. And here we've received many reception reports from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here. And I do send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to Atish Kumar from India, Lars Skoland from Sweden, and Anand Mohan from India, who have sent us a reception report. Thank you, Atish, Lars, and Anand. As usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. For your information, these reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because these reception reports enable us to have a better service for our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in reception reports will be receiving an electronic QSL card or eQSL card from us. And of course, here we've received many letters and emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read these great emails and letters. From India, we've received an email from Pradeep Chandra, one of our old and regular listeners. Again, from India, we've received an email from Avinash Chikat, one of our regular listeners. From Germany, we've received an email from Alex Choroba. Heike Prunen from Finland, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. And the last but not the least is an email from Austria from Harald Seuss. Welcome back. As I said, Heike Puranen from Finland has sent us an email. Let's see what he says. Dear friends, I had a pleasure of listening to your broadcast on Medium Wave. The reception was quite good. Quite good signal strength. No interference from other stations. Unfortunately, I do not have very good knowledge about the music of your country. I enclose with this reception an MP3 file recorded during the listening. If you are interested, you can verify this reception report to reply this email. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and of course from IRIB English Radio. Many thanks for sending this email to IRIB English Radio, Heike Pranen from Finland. It's good to hear that you like the quality of the signal. As you said, the reception was quite good. Quite good signal strength and no interference from other stations. Heike Puranen from Finland, why don't you tell us your views about our broadcast, about our programs? Yes, we will be happy when we know your opinion about the quality of our programs. Which program or programs you like the best? Yes, it's nice. And thank you for the MP3 file. And as you know, we had broadcast many programs about Iranian music and musical instruments, Iranian musical instruments. Maybe you can refer to our website and find the archive of our programs about the Iranian music. For your information, Iranian music has its own enthusiasts around the world. So to find the archive of our programs about Iranian music, you can refer to our website at www.parstoday.com/en. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as verification. Wish you all the best. Heike Pranen from Finland. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And Harald Seuss from Austria has sent us a message, a piece of email. He says, "Dear staff, please, can you help me about sending the report of my reception? The email address I usually send my reception report is english@parstoday.com. Is this the right email address? Please let me know. Thank you a lot and many greetings from Austria." First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, from the Islamic Republic of Iran. Harald Seuss from Austria, thank you for sending us this email. You know, our email address is not english@parsley.com. The correct email is englishradio@irib.ir. So, Harald Seuss, again, our correct email address is englishradio@irib.ir. Yes, that is. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL as confirmation. Thank you for this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. Alex Chiroba from Germany has sent us an email. Let's see what he says. Dear Madam or Sir at IRIB English Radio, I would like to report a reception of your radio broadcast enclosed. You can find my reception report and an audio record as evidence for my reception. I would be glad very much to receive a QSL card or an EQSL of your station for my collection. Salam and warm greetings to you. Alex Choroba from Germany, and please accept our warm gratitudes and appreciations to you for this email. Of course, my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL for verification. Wish you all the best. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. And from India, we've received an email from Pradeep Chandra, one of our regular listeners. Let's see what Pradeep says. Warm greetings from India. A few days ago, I could listen to your English program considerably well, which made me want to submit you a reception report. Kindly check the contents of this report with attached audio clips. I would appreciate your QSL verification card in return. With regards and best wishes. Pradeep Chandra from India, salam and warm greetings to you. Thank you for this email. So, you were listening to IRIB English radio program, so it would be better if You told us which program you were listening and about the quality of the program you were listening. Of course, my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL as verification. Write to us soon, Pradeep Chandra from India. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And we wish you all the best. Welcome back. And here we've received another email from India from Avinash Chikat, one of our regular listeners. Avinash says, I am pleased to report the reception of your English language transmissions of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting on shortwave. I hope that you'd find this report of some use. If found correct, kindly verify these with your QSL card or even an EQSL. I'm interested in collecting postage stamps from across the world. It would be great if you can send a few used postage stamps from Iran if you have any. Salam and greetings to you, Avinash Chikat from India. And please accept our appreciations to you for this email. My colleagues, of course, will soon send you an electronic QSL as verification. And regarding your request about sending you postage stamps, for your information, in the time of pandemic, sending any material or souvenir, any item on behalf of IRIB English Radio is forbidden. You know, in the time of pandemic, we cannot send our listeners any material, and it is halted temporarily. But after this pandemic is controlled around the world, we again send our dear listeners the souvenirs of IRIB English Radio. So, Avinash Chikat from India, we would be very happy to hear your views and attitudes about our programs and broadcast. So, we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And for the time being, please accept our electronic QSL card as verification. We wish you all the best. Avinash Chikat from India. Dear listeners, before wrapping up this edition of Listeners Special, I do send my warm appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports and emails and letters from around the world, including Ajit Kumar from India, Lars Skolan from Sweden, Anand Mohan from India, Harald Seuss from Austria, Avinash Chikat from India, Heike Prunan from Finland, Alex Choroba from Germany, and Pradeep Chandra from India. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with us and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pastoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pastodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
The cultivation of an Islamic identity has been our topic. The attempt now has been to tackle this massive topic through a variety of dimensions. First of all, historical and through the scripture was our first initial discussions. Then we talked about the components of an identity. We took three lectures on that component. The I-ness, the idea of your thoughts, and of course the mind, body, and soul discussion. And last night we took another dimension by looking at the fact that fine, we understand all these dimensions, but there are still barriers that exist on our path. We want to, inside of the heart of our hearts, we want to be a proud Muslim that can identify with the deen, but there are barriers. And one of them I talked about yesterday was internalized Islamophobia. And I got a lot of feedback, questions, concerns, all good, of course, in terms of, you know, there's nothing that was disrespectful. But the notion yesterday was the idea that sometimes the effect of hearing something over and over and over again begins to seep into our subconscious. Right? It's a note for our parents, by the way, and I talk to myself as a father up here. That, you know, if you tell your child at a very young age one thing over and over and over again, negative or positive, it will seep into their subconscious, and that subconscious will begin to kind of, you know, come out maybe later on in their life. It's stored inside of them somewhere. Right? So let's begin to kind of, you know, give them that positive vibe from a very young age, so they begin to believe in themselves. When you begin to kind of watch the Islamophobia in front of us unfold, and now, of course, it's in our backyard. It was always here, but now it's kind of unveiling itself bit by bit, unfortunately. Then you need a really strong sense of identity to not allow that to come in and subconsciously play with your own version of your own deen. So we actually end up adopting the same view as the Islamophobe in front of me. Yes, you're right. I am the secondary, inferior religion. And so a lot of things happen after that. Now, what is the solution to that? Inshallah, tonight. The second barrier that happens when we're trying to establish an Islamic identity is a lack of certainty. The barrier is doubt. And doubt and shuck is a dangerous reality. It has the ability to really result in this unwavering certainty. It has the ability to also kind of come crashing down in the form of kufr and disbelief. Those who move away from the deen, those who remove themselves from the religion, those who claim that I'm no longer a Muslim or I am a watered-down version of Islam, that movement stems from moments of doubt. We only understand the importance of certainty when we understand the power of doubt. Now, because the reality is this, that when you are certain of something, you very proudly identify with it. The deen is very deep, has all of your answers. But you have to go through your respective way of getting your answers from your questions. Now, what is that relative way? Let's understand that. The Holy Prophet has a beautiful hadith, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, Allahumma salli alayhi. He says, as many breaths as there are in this universe, there are that many avenues to God. Oh, that's a nice statement. Now, don't look at it through a pluralistic viewpoint, that everyone is right. No, within the limits and hudud of the Sharia, there are different ways that all of us can reach Allah, subhanahu wa ta'ala. As many people as there are in this hall and outside watching me on those big, nice screens, sometimes I wish I was outside. It looks so nice, I tell you. On those nice screens outside, there are that many avenues to God. Your path to God is not my path to God. There are some of you and me as well, we get triggered to remember God faster in certain areas than others. It's a reality. I'll give you a couple examples. We'll try to figure out what the path of my yaqeen is. I want to kind of, trigger those thoughts inside of you. Shake all of us today at the core. Say, look, if we want to identify with Islam, we have to have yaqeen in the religion. It's a very simple equation. I ask you, if you have doubts, please go out and get them answered. So one of the paths that we have towards Allah is through knowledge. Right? Through knowledge. There are people who read volumes and volumes and volumes of books on Tawheed. It's a whole major in the Hawza, Khuda Shinasi, the Ma'rifat of Allah. Years and years, people dedicate all their research towards Allah. Proofs of it, trying to debunk, of course, the atheist view and this view and that philosopher and this alim. And they find God in that path. Their sense of connection to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is stronger. The more they read, the more ma'arifat they have. Okay, that's one path, fine. Another path is worship. There are those who sit there and tell me that, look, I can read about God all I want, but until my forehead touches the khak of Karbala, subhana rabbil ala wa bihamdi, until I truly experience one Mahi Ramadan, I don't have that ma'arifat of God. It's through acts of worship that I can actually understand Allah better than it is to the books. Fine, that's your path. Another path is tragedy. Many, many people now go through a very difficult tragedy. They lose a loved one. They themselves, let's say, for example, go through a very difficult sickness and disease, and they live, alhamdulillah, they survive, they get cured, and then they have a complete 180. Something clicks. That's your path to God. You've been worshiping God for many, many years. You didn't quite find God in your sujood and salat, but you found God, let's say, for example, the moment you lost your father. Okay? Many people find God on the walls of the Kaaba. Many find God in the dhari of Imam Hussein. Many find God walking from Najd to Karbala. No problem. That's all your path. Through hardship, through struggles, through sakhti and mushkilat, you find Allah. My point is, all of these are respective paths towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. My question to all of you and me tonight is, what is your respective path to God? Stop and think for a second. When am I in tune with God the most? When I read up on Him, a nice PDF. When I increase my worship, when I stop for a second and read the dua with huzur-e qalb, with my heart in it. I found God in the grave of my father, for example. I found God on the plains of Karbala. Okay, that's step number one. Now, step number two is, for every journey towards God, that journey can become to shaitan as well. Oh. From knowledge to worship to hajj to tragedy to ziyarat to everything can easily turn into a path of shaitan. Let's explain. Knowledge. It's not a guarantee, and I say this as a person who's come out of the hawza, not a guarantee that everybody who comes out of the hawza has this extreme ma'rifat of Allah. In fact, if that ilm is not paired with the purification of the soul, that ilm becomes a hujub or hijab, a veil. In fact, it becomes ba'is-e ghurur insan. It becomes a reason for the takabbur and the ego of the human being. It could be spiritual. Absolutely. Again, we look at the Surah Jumu'ah Tartib, right? وَيُزَكِّيهِمْ وَيُعَلِّمُهُمُ الْكِتَابِ. That tartib, that sequence is very important. Purification, purify, and then you teach. Because with that knowledge now, that knowledge, yes, when we have a little bit of knowledge, our sina, our chest comes out a little bit. It's that tazkiyah that brings it back onto the ground.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Rahi Kareem Adi Alim Hali Hakim Mati Ghafur Shakur Wadud Qay. وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
The Zionist regime forces continue their attacks against Palestinians. What is disappointing is the inaction from world community and the so-called defenders of human rights. In this regard, we have provided views from world media websites. Stay tuned for the second part, please. The Electronic Intifada had this headline, writing, "Why are Israel's cops a strategic partner for EU?" This website noted, "Supporters of the Israeli regime, believe it or not, get one or two things right. The constant claim that their beloved regime cherishes innovation contains a grain of truth. What other oppressive views Facebook and Twitter as such vital tools for alerting the world to its brutality? On October 8, the Zionist regime police force effectively admitted that it was subjugating civilians en masse. The force posted photographs on the internet of its officers helping to seal off Shafat's refugee camp near Al-Quds. The Zionist regime presented the suffocation of Shafat as a response to the killing of an Israeli troop. Collective punishment is forbidden under the Geneva Conventions and other instruments of international law. Every time it resorts to collective punishment, the Zionist regime commits a war crime. Avoiding democratic oversight, the European Union has built a formal alliance with the Zionist regime's police. The EU even signed an accord on deepening ties with Israeli regime's police during September, just a few weeks before that force implicitly boasted of committing a war crime in Shafat camp. Though that accord, the Zionist regime can exchange personal data about Palestinians living under occupation with Europol, the EU's police agency. The deal was put together quite swiftly by EU standards. Negotiations aimed at sealing it kicked off in November 2021. Around the same time that the talks opened, the Israeli regime sent a delegation of 30 high-ranking diplomats to Brussels. Among the many officials they met were Laurent Michel from the Migration and Home Affairs Department of the European Commission, the EU's executive. A briefing note prepared for Michel's discussions obtained under Freedom of Information rules states that Israel is a strategic partner country for the EU on security cooperation. The accord signed in September this year follows on from a 2018 working arrangement between the Israeli regime and Europol. The briefing note for Michel contends that there should be even stronger cooperation with the Zionist regime. It points out that Europol assists the national authorities of EU governments in identifying cross-border links to organized crime. The Israeli contribution in such cases continues to be of utmost importance, it adds. Since the 2018 arrangement entered into force, the Israeli regime has established a liaison office at Europol's headquarters in The Hague. Such steps offer considerable potential to promote operational contribution, the briefing note says. The 2018 arrangement gives a list of crimes on which the Zionist regime and Europol may work together. They include terrorism and war crimes. It stipulates, too, that information exchanged between the two sides must not be collected in obvious violation of human rights. Joke? Was that somebody's idea of a joke? The Zionist regime's police force, as already noted, actively commits war crimes while serving a state that labels all forms of resistance to its systematic violence as terrorism. The Zionist regime systematically uses torture against Palestinians in so-called terrorism investigations, methods which are officially sanctioned and carried out with impunity. The fact that the Zionist regime's police force is based in occupied East Al-Quds should be sufficient to rule out any dealing with it. Despite opposing the Zionist regime's colonization of East Al-Quds on paper, the EU has embraced a police force which plays an integral part in colonization. And what does obvious violation of human rights mean in this context? Does the EU seriously want the Israeli regime to be a little more subtle in the way it subjugates Palestinians? The Zionist regime's police force is not the only despicable body to enjoy a metaphoric message from EU representatives lately. The EU's embassy in Tel Aviv has just teamed up, and not for the first time, with the European Leadership Network, perhaps the most deceptively named outfit in the Zionist regime's army of professional lobbyists. Both the embassy and the European Leadership Network recently hosted a conference for experienced diplomats, officials and experts. Among the few details published about the event were that it discussed Russia's tension with Ukraine. It is a safe thing that the participants were too polite to denounce the Israeli regime's aggression against Palestinians. Senior figures in the European Leadership Network have raised funds to support that aggression. At one point, the group even counted Michael Herzog, now the Zionist regime's ambassador to the U.S., among its management. He had a significant role in planning a 2002 bombing raid on Gaza, in which 8 children were killed. Don't expect the EU to shun the butchers of Palestinian children. The fabricated regime of Israel, after all, is a strategic partner for the EU.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith through action. Sunday, the 5th of Ramadan, 1394, the 22nd of September, 1974. There are a handful of other verses at the end of Surah Anfal which restate the duties associated with faith mentioned here, such as prayer, zakat, holding fast to Allah. It also mentions some duties associated with faith from another perspective. Let us turn to these now. Indeed, those who have believed and migrated and struggled with their possessions and their persons, and against their possessions and their persons, and those who gave them shelter when they were refugees without a home, and helped, they are guardians of one another. They are bound together and on the same side. They are of a single substance. They are the bricks and mortar of a single structure.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The likeness of the faithful is like an edifice. They support one another. Have you seen how these bricks go together in these ornate ceilings? Each brick is a single believer. Each believer is a single brick. They fit together and support one another. Together they form a structure that takes great effort to demolish. Tens of bricks side by side. This one brick helps to protect the whole, and the whole all help to protect this one brick. They are guardians of one another, held together by strong bonds, united. And those who have believed, the Quran, Surah 8, verse 72. Pay attention here. What about those who have believed, who have faith in their hearts, but did not migrate? They believed, but they didn't act on the moral duties that arise from their faith. What about them? You have no guardianship, wilayah, in relation to them until they migrate. These are not bound to you. They are not a part of you. There is no relationship or guardianship between the two of you. Until when? Until they migrate. Until they follow through on the moral duties to which faith is attached. Hollowed out faith is no use in this world, dear brother. It does not produce any effects on the Islamic society. As for the hereafter, this is a separate discussion. You have no guardianship in relation to them until they migrate. There is another verse which is very relevant to what we are discussing here, and it comes just a few verses after those we have been discussing. Allah says, those who have believed, migrated, and struggled in the way of Allah, and those who gave them shelter and helped, it is they who are the truly faithful. The Quran, Surah 8, verse 74. So, if those who emigrate, struggle, give shelter and help are the truly faithful, what are everyone else? They are false believers.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.